Welcome to the Vanderbilt University Center for Teaching podcast, part of the center's efforts to cultivate dialogue about university teaching and learning among faculty, students, and staff. I'm your host, Derek Bruff, an assistant director here at the Center for Teaching. In this episode, we feature an interview with James Lang, associate professor of English at Assumption College in Massachusetts. Dr. Lang is author of Life on the Tenure Track, Lessons from the First Year, a memoir chronicling his first year as a faculty member, and On Course, a week-by-week guide to your first semester of college teaching. He also writes On Course, a column on teaching that appears in the Chronicle of Higher Education. Dr. Lang was the keynote speaker at Vanderbilt's Graduate Student Research Day in March. While on campus, he participated in a discussion sponsored by the Career Advancement and Professional Development Program, a program that provides mentoring for junior faculty in the College of Arts and Science, directed by English professor Dana Nelson. Following that discussion, I sat down with Dr. Lang to discuss the topic of that session, the idea that undergraduate students can experience some kind of personal transformation during their first year of college. Is transformation a reasonable goal for first-year students? If not, what is a reasonable goal? What are some conditions that facilitate these types of goals, and what are some conditions that inhibit them? These are some of the questions that we explored during our discussion. Let's start, if you could just give us a little bit of background as to how you came to this topic and what some of your initial thoughts were.
Yeah, okay. So in response to a column I wrote in the Chronicle of Higher Education, Tim Clydesdale, who's a sociologist in New Jersey, sent me a copy of his book, which was a study of how first-year students who are in their first year out of high school sort of manage the world, and how do they see the world in that first year, and how do they manage their lives, essentially. And what he found was that, contrary to what many faculty might expect or what we might see in, like, college admissions brochures or in first-year program rhetoric, that most first-year students put their identities into what he calls their core values, which are their beliefs about religion and politics and the world and their families and all that other stuff. They put those values into what he calls an identity lockbox, and they keep them locked away for that first year so that they don't actually, even in courses in which we might expect students to be calling into question their basic values about life, like courses in literature or philosophy, they're not doing that. And so instead what they're doing is they're spending most of their first year learning how to manage their time, learning how to handle gratifications and delay gratifications in terms of things like sex and alcohol in order to be able to still do their coursework and get the grades that they need to. So that they're very practical-minded people in that first year, which does sort of go against some of the rhetoric that we get about transformations that students undergo when they, you know, we have this sort of narrative arc of, you know, the student leaving the small college or leaving a sort of insular environment in high school and then coming to the big sort of university and having their eyes opened and their minds awakened to all these new ways of seeing the world. And Clydesdale's research would suggest that just doesn't happen very much. So that was something that I found, you know, a little bit surprising, because in my classes in Introduction to Literature and Composition, I'm trying to teach them basic skills, but I also do want them to sort of to open their eyes to the way literature can help us think differently about the world, or the way writing can, you can use writing to learn or to help you think through issues that are important to you, that writing can be a form of learning and a way of self-understanding. And those objectives aren't explicitly always spelled out on my syllabus, but I, you know, they're things that I do think about. And what Clydesdale's book suggests was that those objectives really aren't being achieved for most students, and so that we should maybe try to focus more on the practical skills that we have to teach, or the practical knowledge that we want students to have, especially in first year courses. He then sort of goes on to suggest that maybe this kind of transformation that the rhetoric about the rhetoric of the sort of college awakening, that those kinds of experiences may happen later in the college career. And actually, he told me that he's working on another book right now, which is he's going to study the first year out of college and see whether or not, to what extent those students really have been sort of transformed at the end of their college years. But what he also found, which was interesting, was that there were a certain amount of people who underwent transformative experiences in their first year, and those people generally went on to become college professors and administrators. So that what he says is that we sort of, there's this very small group of people who do have these life-changing experiences in their first year, and they go on to perpetuate the idea that the first year is a life-changing experience. Whereas in the meanwhile, the vast majority of students are just sort of figuring out how to live their lives and manage their time and deal with all the responsibilities that you have when you're living alone for the first time. So that was the basic, that was the way I kind of first discovered this issue and thought about it myself. And I had enough experiences as a teacher to make me think that it rang true to me. It rang true that I had you know, freshman students who did well in my classes, but then didn't seem to me to be any different, essentially, than when they went in, except for having become better at, you know, managing sentence construction. So that was the basic idea.
So if this type of transformation that is at least in the rhetoric around the college experience, if that's not happening with first year students, if it's not likely to happen, then what are some reasonable goals for that first year?
Yeah, that's a good question, and we were just having a discussion with the faculty here at Vanderbilt, which I thought, you know, the idea that maybe just self-awareness is a goal that we could try to achieve, and that as long as that in order for them to sort of transform themselves, they have to know who they are, essentially, and so that maybe that can be an initial goal that we could try to think about, having to have them articulate their conceptions about their core values, and that's certainly something that you can do in like a composition class, for example. And I do know faculty members who teach composition who start often with a unit on education, for example, and have students write about their educational experiences. What are the things that, you know, in your educational history, what have been the transformative moments? And something like that may actually help students think about and articulate their values, because that forces them to go back and look at what created my values, and so it might increase some of that self-understanding. But that seems to me to be a more limited and potentially reachable goal than the idea of expecting them to go back and be a completely changed human being after their first year of college. So maybe that goal of self-awareness is something that we could hope for.
In terms of that transformation, the things that are in that lockbox, is this type of transformation something that happens, you think, later in their college career?
Well,
is that still a reasonable goal for a college experience, or are the things in the lockbox things that as professors as instructors we don't try to touch?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that for most of us, we probably do want to, you know, if we're committed enough to our disciplines that we, at the very least, we want students to recognize that what we do is interesting and worthwhile, essentially. So that, like, I want students to understand that, or I want students to be open to the possibility that a work of literature could change their lives, you know, and I want them to not just read, I don't want them to think about literature as just something to take to the beach. I want them to think about literature as a way of asking that writers have historically asked and tried to answer questions about what it means to be a human being. And so I want them to think about literature in that way. Take it seriously and think about what it is that you're reading when you read something like that. And so that doesn't mean that I want them to commit to a particular way of viewing the world. It just means I want them to be willing to take this body of work seriously. And I'd be willing to bet that most faculty probably somewhere in their back of their heads would have that goal. You know, we would like it even if they may not put it on their syllabus, they would like, you know, we'd like it to know that we've inspired others to interest in our subject. And most of us teach because we like to talk about our subject. And so the more people that we can convince to take our subject seriously and talk about it, the better. With that said, you know, I don't know if you can make that like an explicit goal on your in terms of your learning objectives. So I think that we can't make sort of explicit goals to change their minds about this issue or to convince them in order to believe this or that, because that would be sort of betraying the idea that really this is about learning and about helping them figure things out for themselves, as opposed to us just telling them things. So if it really is sort of a learning-focused transaction here, in which we're trying to help them find their way through this, through their education, then we should not expect that any particular core value is going to change to this or that. But we might still hope that they're going to examine their core values and be willing to change them, mm-hmm. be open to the idea that education can change them or can make them think differently about the things that matter most to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What are some roadblocks or some challenges that make that goal difficult?
Yeah, well, one of the big things is, there was this classic study by William Perry who did an analysis of a whole series of interviews with Harvard and Radcliffe undergraduates in the 50s and 60s and asked them to think about how, essentially asked them questions about their attitudes and about knowledge and about learning. And so what did they believe about learning and about knowledge and education? So, he developed a scheme that had four parts to it. And those four parts, the first sort of basic view that many students come into college with is what he calls their received knowers. They believe that the professor has the knowledge in his or her head, and it's the learning transaction is just getting it out of that person's head and getting it into your head. But then many students come to see that actually professors often disagree, even experts disagree in subjects, so then that sort of flips them exactly in the opposite direction to sort of pure relativism, in which everyone's opinion is equal and it's all just opinion. And then some students move beyond that into a stage that he calls proceduralism, in which they are willing to acknowledge that there actually are standards that differ according to the disciplines, and that you just have to learn to go through those. You have to learn the procedures about how to learn each discipline. But they do that. They can do that just as sort of like jumping through hoops. You know, it might not necessarily affect their basic values, or even get them to question their basic values. Then the last stage that very few students get to, according to Perry, is one in which they recognize that it's a world in which, you know, no values are set in stone, but it's important to make a commitment to your values and yet to be open to changing them. So it's in a sort of a pluralistic world in which people have to make decisions. They use evidence to make those decisions and arguments, but they're open to, their decisions are provisional, they're open to change. And that last model is the one that I think we would want to have for like a democratic society in which people do argue with each other, and hopefully that argument leads us to think things through more carefully and to make better decisions about the world. But according to Perry, most students stay within those first few categories, and so those would be the big blocks to having students evaluate their basic beliefs and have any possibility that those beliefs might change. So a received knower who is just sort of accepting knowledge from you, can certainly do that without making any change to their core beliefs. You're just sort of giving him a package that he has to give back to you on the exam. Someone who's in the sort of pure relativism mode, the same thing. They're willing to sort of give you back what you want, or even to just say, well, this is what I think, but without really having thought about why they think that. The procedural knower is the same issue. They can learn to play the game, but without actually having it affect what they really believe or think. So it's only the people in that last stage. So again, which just sort of supports the idea that it's very difficult to the goal of having students really undergo these profound transformations is seems to me like a pretty one that's very difficult to achieve, even in the later years of college.
Are there approaches to teaching that faculty and instructors might be able to take that would help move students through those phases?
Yeah, well, I do believe, and I have always believed, that approaches which rely more on students doing work in the classroom as opposed to students doing, for example, like working through problems or, in groups or pairs or discussions, or I think gives students a little bit more opportunity to question their own beliefs than when students are simply being, are getting lectures for the entire semester. I do lecture, and I think lecturing serves a really important function in the educational transaction, but I've always believed that it can't and shouldn't be the only thing that we do, that we have to be willing to give students the chance to try and argue and think about and discuss the ideas that we provide to them, either through readings or through lectures, so that I think while it may be especially hard to get students to sort of re-examine their core beliefs and values in any context, having them do it in a context in which they just sit in the chair and listen to us, I think that would be incredibly difficult to do. If, on the other hand, we're saying to them, here's an idea, tell me what you think about it, or show me why this idea, where do you see problems in this idea, then they're more likely to start getting closer to those core beliefs and values.
I'm wondering if there are also social or cultural reasons why first-year students are somehow limited in the ways that they transform.
Yeah, Clydesdale has an interesting point in his book, which is that the fact that many of these students are focused on just sort of managing to get through life successfully without re-examining their core values, that's what most Americans do. And so, we do have a reluctance in our society to, you always hear that, actually, don't talk about religion or politics with other people, because that just makes everyone upset. And but those obviously are the places where most core values are located, in your views on religion and politics. So if we take those two subjects off the table in American culture, as we frequently do, we shouldn't expect students to immediately come to college and then immediately say, wait, I can talk about these things now, whereas I haven't really been able to for the past 18 years. That would be a really hard transformation for students to make. So the stages of the sort of initial stages of peri are ones that I think many Americans are in general. So this idea that the very few people reach the fourth stage, I don't think that's true of just college students. I think that's true in general of American society. And we are a culture that doesn't have a strong tradition or like a space for wide open public debates about issues like this.
Mm-hmm. Are there ways to try to mitigate that in the classroom?
I think you have to be transparent in your teaching by explaining what is the point of what you're doing. And so if you're going to have a discussion, you need to say, listen, because sometimes students will say, I don't care what my fellow students say. I want to know, you're the one that's supposed to be able to tell me the answers here. And so you have to say at that point, whatever I'm teaching in this particular class, whether it's, how to interpret a poem or some, how to do a particular math problem or how to think about a particular historical event, may not ultimately help you in your career. And I think it's important to acknowledge that sometimes and say, so for me to just sit here and tell it to you so you can spit that back on the exam to me, that doesn't matter. That's not what you're here for. You're here to learn how to think more effectively and how to develop certain kinds of thinking skills, writing skills, even talking skills. And so the discussion actually is going to do a much better job of that than it is for me to stand up here and tell you the sort of answers or the right way to interpret this poem. When you're forced to articulate your ideas about the poem, that's forcing you to think in a way that you don't have to do when you can just sit there and listen to me and take notes on what I have to say. So I think you do have to say that to students on a regular basis, and you have to let them know, here's what we're doing and here's why we're doing it. And I think the more you do that, the more students will be open to the possibilities, be open to what you have to offer them, as opposed to just complaining because you're not essentially telling them the answers.
We've talked a lot about the college course as a place where these discussions happen, where certain types of learning happen. Coursework is not all that students do while they're at college, and I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on the other things that they do at college, things that are not course-related, extracurricular activities, first-year experiences like the new Vanderbilt Commons and Vanderbilt Visions. Are there ways in which things that happen outside of the classroom can help students transform, if we can use that word, in productive ways?
Yeah, certainly. I'd be willing to bet that a lot of transformative experiences that students have are ones that happen outside the classroom. For example, the college where I teach, we're a largely white, middle-class student population from New England and New York. So when students come to that environment, students coming into that environment are students primarily who have been in that environment, in their high schools and in their communities. So, Assumption is making a big push right now to try and recruit more minority students. And what a student might experience in living with a black student in their first year, a student who has not been, had any all that much contact with minority students up until that point, probably is going to learn more from that experience than he or she, in terms of their core values and their beliefs, probably would learn more from that experience than he or she would from whatever happens in class. So I do think that stuff happens, and probably happens a lot more than we realize, but it's hard for me to think about how the programming can influence that specifically, because you can require students to go to lectures and concerts and stuff like that. That may even serve other important functions, like just building community among the students is an important issue. But again, I'm not sure that you can program those things in such a way that it's going to create sort of profound life-changing experiences for the students. And my guess is that that kind of academic programming, which I completely support, actually, and I think is good to create a vibrant intellectual and artistic life on a college campus. At the same time, I think, again, it's maybe quixotic to hope that students are going to come away from those experiences in any way, transformed, just as it may be quixotic to hope that they're going to come out of a freshman class as transformed like that.
That was James Lang, Associate Professor of English at Assumption College. For more on this podcast episode's topic, see Dr. Lang's recent Chronicle of Higher Education column, The Myth of First-Year Enlightenment. You can find a link to this column in the show notes for this podcast episode. In those show notes, you'll also find a link to information on the book that Dr. Lang mentioned, The First Year Out, Understanding American Teens After High School, by Tim Clydesdale. You'll also find a link to more information on William Perry's Scheme of Intellectual Development of College Students, and a link to the Commons, Vanderbilt's First Year Living and Learning Initiative. You can view the show notes, as well as leave comments or questions about this episode, by visiting blogs.vanderbilt.edu/CFTpodcast. If you have any comments on Dr. Lane's thoughts about first-year experiences, please stop by the blog and leave a comment. Vanderbilt instructors are also welcome to call the Center for Teaching at 322-7290 to arrange a meeting with a CFT consultant to discuss teaching first-year students. Thanks for listening to the Vanderbilt University Center for Teaching podcast. Please join us for future episodes by visiting the podcast's homepage, blogs.vanderbilt.edu/CFTpodcast, or by subscribing to the podcast through iTunes or a similar program. I've been your host, Derek Bruff. Thanks for listening.